This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk on this St. George's Day, Tuesday, April the 23rd. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, the absolutely lovely...
Me!
It's Miss on a bike.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
They've gone gift crazy.
I know, it's going mad all of a sudden on Twitter.
I love it.
We were moaning earlier, we were saying, oh, they're a bit slow, there are not so many tweets today, and then all of a sudden they've gone a bit loopy, haven't they? They've gone gift gaga.
Stacey Tilltop. Is it Stacey Tillot?
Yep.
Replying, I can only speak in gifts. I love it. I love it.
Right.
Crazy people.
I want to tell you about our sponsor, the lovely folks at ZC Social Media, because coming up very soon now on May the 31st is this year's ZC Live. It's back. It's on May the 31st. It's the Strood Academy, and the ZC team are super excited and have lined up an amazing agenda, which will be revealed over the coming weeks. So far, these are some of the things that we know about. There's going to be a ZC Live breakfast that's going to take place between 8 and 9 o'clock. There's going to be workshops, and the workshops are going to be about Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. There's some speakers. There's David Pepper from Twitter, Kevin Thorpe from Big Jam Studios, and Andy Lambert from Content Cow. There's going to be more, and of course, the lovely Zoe Cairns will be the headline speaker at the event. I think this is the fifth year that they run ZC Live. It's completely free to attend. Last year, there were about 500 people there, and I know the tickets are going really quickly. So if you want to book your free ticket to ZC Live on the 31st of May at the Strood Academy, eventbrite.co.uk/ZC Live 2019 tickets. See you there.
I want to be sensible, but you just can't.
What do you want to be sensible for?
Well, because I'm doing a business show and we're trying to encourage people to, like, go and influence people, Paul.
Are we? Right.
Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Is that it? Okay, got it.
We're role models in this place.
Got it.
You can't be, when somebody like Chris Hyde sends you a gif of me, he's put, if it was an ice bath, you definitely wouldn't be an otter. How do you two know so much? And then he's put Mulan, which is my favourite Disney movie of all time, as the gif. So thank you very much, Chris Hyde.
Cool. There you go.
So I can't be professional and all-knowing when we've got that to deal with.
Is that right?
Correct.
Cool. Well, you can do one more tweet or an email, and then I want to talk to
you. I'll give you one of my long emails that you've just given me. So that's introducing Ashford Corporate Giving Fund. The new Ashford Corporate Giving Fund will bring together Ashford businesses committed to supporting their local communities. So the aim of the new fund is run by Kent Community Foundation. It's to connect socially responsible businesses and entrepreneurs with innovative projects to make real differences in the Ashford community and help those most in need. Now, we had Josephine on the show, my goodness, probably about a month ago,
didn't we?
And she really went into detail this. So Josephine McCartney is the chief exec of Kent Community Foundation and just really told us, I'm going to summarise this, because it really told us about how actually we want to give to our community, not just give into a big pot and it go elsewhere. So if you would like to join the Ashford Corporate Giving Fund to help make positive, lasting changes to your local community, you can contact Josephine on josephine@kentcf.org.uk. Or if you just want to donate, then you can contact Kent Community Foundation, which is www.kentcf.org.uk. I would give you the number, but nobody calls. Just email. That'd be great.
I'm still getting tweets coming in here.
Of course we are. We've told people to be silly now. Ethelbreit, where have they been all our lives?
Well, they've been in Eastern Europe is where they've been the last couple of weeks.
Well, I've had no hairy legs, have I? So we know that they've been away.
I'm going to do one more tweet and then we're going to talk. I've got 88 more tweets here apparently now. But I want to tell you about this because I'll be there on Friday. It's the Seven Oaks Town Partnership, Seven Oaks Business Show taking place at the Stag Theatre.
Come on already.
Yeah, this Friday. It's at the Stag Plaza. It's free entry, 10 till 4, Friday the 26th of April, business networking, presentations and exhibits. It's one of my favourite business events. It's small and well-formed. It's really good fun. I go every year. There's always some really interesting people there, and I'll be there this Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, one, if you remember, we had the, was it the mayor we had in, or one of the councillors?
No, it was the mayor. It was the mayor. It was Roddy Hogarth. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was in this time last year, obviously talking about the same event.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So you like it because it is small.
Yeah. I've got a lot of time for Sevenoaks as a town. They do loads of really interesting things. And it is a community. It's a real community thing. And they really support each other. So because Sevenoaks isn't a particularly big town, it's, barely more than a village, really. But the Sevenoaks Business Fair is always a great event. There's normally about 20, 25 stands there.
It takes us back to what Ollie was saying about, how do you transition? Do you think they want to get bigger to make more money, let's be really honest, and to grab more attention? Or are they staying with what is really working well and be able to serve and give high quality?
No, I think they're staying with what... I also present the Sevenoaks Business Awards, which is always a brilliant event. There's normally about 150 people there. But again, it's the whole community spirit there. Everybody supports everybody else. There are big businesses as well, because you've got the Marks and Spencers and Specsavers and all, and Wagamamas and all the chains and everything. But they all join in. There's a real spirit about the place. There really is.
Yeah. There's some great garages there as well. You've got the Lamborghini garage.
Exactly.
Here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Spend the afternoon there.
Yeah.
Do you believe in global community?
Yeah, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, of course.
How can you have both, and how do they differ? Or how are they the same?
Because you have communities of interest and communities of geography. I've often said that Channel Radio is a community radio station for the world. We have shows that have audience that is spread all over the globe because they all have something in common. They all have an interest in what that particular show topic is about. So you have communities of interest, and then you have communities of geography, people that live in the same area where they have shared issues over the same things. So a community can form on either basis. Yeah. I'm a great believer in localism, but localism could be global, if that's not too much of an oxymoron.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
But I get it. But it works.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. Anyway, I tell you what, I want to talk to Ollie because he's been sitting there patiently, and he's the most interesting person here, so we need to talk to him, even though he likes Lamborghinis and I don't. But never mind.
More a Ferrari man. Or a...
Yeah. I just can't get on with Lambos, me. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back on the show, but it was an awful long time ago that you were on last time, Oliver. Oliver Musto, Playfair. Ollie is a serial entrepreneur, although he's never done cereal, which is one of the few things he hasn't done. And I think you had a go at that as well, haven't you, at some point?
Not cereal, but food, yes.
Yeah. How many businesses have you founded?
Oh, I don't know. Proper businesses, probably only four or five. But
six, seven, eight, yeah.
But all the sort of crazy ones that never actually get to even being a company, probably 20, 30.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk to you in a moment about your latest business, which I know you're very passionate about, and it's going great guns. Just give us a bit of a feel to your background, where you started, what got you into this, and what drives you as someone that keeps inventing brilliant businesses, which is what you do.
That's very kind of you to say. So I trained as a web developer, set up a web design company, and I run that and I sold that. Then I set up a business that sold robots. I run that and sold that. Then I set up a knitting retail company.
There's always a thing.
I'm laughing here. I'm just like, yes.
I'm a web developer, robots, knitting.
did the knitting one. I did that with a friend, and we ran that and sold that. And then I took a couple of years out, built a house, didn't sell that. I still got that. Then there's been a whole range of different businesses in between sort of now and then. In between, I did a consultancy gig for a couple of years where that was a turnaround of some e-commerce businesses. How did you find that?
From being an entrepreneur in control of what you were doing yourself to helping other people with their businesses, how did you find that transition?
I recently sold the big business, or the biggest one so far. Spent a couple of years off. Had a few ideas for businesses, but in hindsight were just completely rubbish. And I thought, okay, the ideas I'm coming up with at the moment are pretty rubbish. Let's do something else. How was I going to keep making rubbish businesses and run out of money and all that sort of stuff?
Right.
So I got in touch with a friend who owns a media company, lots of magazines and a few e-commerce businesses. And what started off was meant to be a few weeks, it ended up in a couple of years. That was really interesting because that was a VC-backed type thing. So it's a good insight into how that world works. But I decided that isn't the world I wanted to go into.
It is different, though. Venture capital is a completely different kind of animal, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's lots of different forces wanting different things, which I found quite difficult to work with. Yeah. So got back to making businesses, and that's where we are now with PrintFab.
Right. So tell us what PrintFab is. Tell us when you started it and how you're doing.
So PrintFab's a really cool business. Background being that we've done lots of e-commerce stuff, where we're buying other people's products and selling them, usually putting them in a warehouse, sending them a bit of post, and it's all relatively straightforward. And that was great. But I really wanted to start making something. And I'd heard of this company in the States that were manufacturing fabric on demand, like printing on fabric as and when they were ordered. It's really difficult to do that because the machines are used to, or traditionally the machines print in very, very long runs. So initial order in 1,000 metres, the math doesn't really stack up. But there were some new machines that were coming out, which meant you could print a metre of fabric or 100 metres of fabrics at the touch of a button and do that in a cost-effective way that's good for the customer to be able to make money on their resale product and for us to make money.
So let me understand what it is you're exactly doing here. Are you printing to fabric or are you making the fabric?
Printing.
Right, yep. So presumably you've...
Both in a sense, because we are getting stuff manufactured as well, so...
Yeah.
It's but the main activity is we print fabric,
Okay. I'm just, in my head, though, I'm thinking, have you got a loom that's making fabric or are you making printed fabric, if you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So presumably what you have is a range of different fabrics onto which you print?
Yeah, so we have a website where people would upload an image... or design and set up the repeats or the fabrics that they want.
So let's kind of have an example. Saying I wanted to produce curtains for a small housing estate that all had bird's face on it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So basically I send you a picture.
I'm loving that, by the way. Yeah, I'm loving that.
It will work, wouldn't it? It would just work.
I love the way you and I get excited because I just sit here and go really quiet and just I'm excited about it. And you go... Right, and you're like stopping every second. It makes me chuckle. Carry on. Yeah. My face on.
Yeah, so I send you a picture of her face.
Yeah.
And you print it on a few hundred metres of fabric, is that right?
Yeah, it could be a few hundred metres or it could be just 1 metre.
Okay. You can do really small runs.
Yeah, you'll be surprised at the amount of people's faces and other body parts that we print onto fabric.
I can imagine.
To be used to be made into things.
That's too much information.
It's too much for us.
That is genius.
We don't spot it.
Hen do's. Right. Stag do's. A lot, you can imagine it.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is for smallish businesses who are making products to resale. So it could be people making cushions, curtains, clothing, all sorts of things. It's really interesting to see what people are making and what does well as well.
Just thinking about it, I mean, the corporate branding market could work there as well, couldn't it? You know, I mean, you could have your own branded curtains or whatever in your offices or
anything that's made out of fabric we can print the fabric. We don't do the cut and sew yet, but that is something we're looking into. We can print pretty much on any type of fabric, whether it be a curtain fabric or active wear or lycra or anything really. So it's a really interesting business, seeing all the different types of businesses that want fabric printing, how they use it, and from a sort of an operational point of view, we've got some of the best machines out there. We've automated the production process to an extent where it's actually really difficult for us to recruit staff because everything is automated. So from that perspective, it's been a chance to sort of flex our technological muscles and write these systems which don't exist out there. So that when someone places an order, they all get batched up and then printed out in a really, really quick fashion. So
where did you source the machines to do this, Ollie?
So there are a handful of machines out there. In truth, a lot of the machines, the manufacturer will tell you, yes, it's great, it works all the time. But the truth is these machines are still in their infancy. It's quite a sort of new technology.
That's a market that I know nothing about but also fascinates me. People that build the machines that do this kind of thing. Because they're presumably they're building machines that don't have any market at all until they've built a machine.
Yeah, so a lot of the time they're taking the paper printing machines.
Right.
And the difference between printing on paper, it all gets terribly technical now, but the difference between printing on paper and ink on fabric is, for example, a piece of fabric will need 10 times the amount of ink. And it has to be put onto the fabric in a certain way, which is very different to paper. So a lot of manufacturers of these machines are taking the paper machines, cannibalising them.
Right.
So, for example, one of the machines we've got is based on a paper printer, and they've ripped out all the bits that they don't need and put the bits in that change it. But there isn't a sort of de facto sort of fabric printing machine in the same way that there are loads of paper ones.
Right.
So support is limited, and you kind of have to learn how to use these machines and make it up as you go along.
That's cool, isn't it? Isn't that cool?
It fascinates me. If I could sit here and just listen, because the thing is, I'm not even thinking about the product that you're doing. I'm just thinking about what is it that motivates you to want to build so many different styles of businesses? Because it's not the product. It must be something else that gives to you.
I know. Lamborghinis.
It used to be that, probably.
What is it?
Certainly this year it was to provide a good income for my family. But having sort of ticked that box, it's I just love doing cool stuff. And this fabric printing business, we literally just print fabric, which on the face of it is probably not the most exciting thing in the world. But the challenges associated with it, whether it be automating the machines or working with the supply chain, which is really difficult to work with because it tends to be with companies all overseas. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's not an open industry, so you have to really navigate your way around it quite well, which provides something really interesting to do.
In terms of that supply chain, is that in terms of the raw materials, the raw stuff that you're printing on?
Yeah. So the sort of raw fibre, which is a starting point, that gets woven, and there's a whole other load of process in between when we get it. There are companies that sell it in the UK, so you can buy it, and that might be, I know, let's say £5 a metre. But if you're prepared to put in the extra work and work with these suppliers in other places, that the price reduces massively, which means you can offer your service at a much lower cost than your...
Yep.
I like to think we're sort of democratising textile production to an extent.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's great to see our customers being able to compete with the really large companies. Simply because I'd like to think we're playing a part in reducing the cost of printing textile.
Fantastic. So how long have you been going?
We've been going for 3 years. It took us a good year to set up the machines and get them working. Horrendously difficult. So we've only been trading properly probably for a couple of years, 2.5 years. So.
Right. And is there a general pattern to the type of people or organisations that are using your service, or is it, you know, just...
A real mix. So, yeah the hobbyists who are printing pictures of family and things like that to make cushions. You have people who are selling things on things like Etsy, Not in the High Street, ASOS. And then you have the corporate things. So we did some stuff at King's Cross, done some stuff at BBC. Hmm. But the bulk of it is people who are using the fabric to then make something and then sell. But
So they're kind of manufacturers, like furniture manufacturers or curtain makers or cushion makers or whatever.
Exactly. And that's the bulk of our business. So it's if we get something right and we do it in a good way, that helps them grow a little bit, we'd like to think. Mm. And then they keep growing, we keep growing. And
Do you think... that a lot of the success of what you're doing is because you can do it in small runs? Is it that tailorization of things?
There's two parts. It's the small runs, the use of this technology to be able to offer small runs is one thing. But there are a handful of other companies that are doing this in the country, but they're still not very open. Mm. So it's actually difficult to find out what the price of, say, a printed meter of whatever type of fabric is. So we've taken a very different approach, and we're very open. We publish all our prices all over the website. Mm. So it's very easy for people to know exactly how much something's going to cost, what it's going to be. Mm. It's going to be of a good quality. That's perhaps part of why we've been able to compete with some very established people and perhaps maybe doing a bit better than some of them. So,
okay. Yeah, and it makes sense, doesn't it? But again, it's one of the things that I was kind of alluded to earlier when I was having a rant about this, that, and the other. I see the future as very much being about customization and niches and being able to do things for people that people want. You know, we spent the 20th century commoditizing everything. So, you know, one size fits all. You can have any color you want as long as it's black, you know, da, 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 da. And I think things are changing now so that with the advent of technology such as yours, you can do smaller runs of things. You can make special things, you know, for people, and people respond to that. But you can do it in a way that's cost effective. That's the key thing, isn't it?
Well, you've started so many businesses and, you know, you've exited them. How did you trust your intuition, one, that you could start a business in that way and it make money, which is the goal of business, and then two, what gave you the confidence to exit that point to move on to something next?
So starting businesses, I ask everyone, is doing this bonkers? Is this doing bonkers? If enough people say it isn't bonkers, or if people say it is bonkers, actually, that doesn't make any sense at all. Because actually, when I set up the knitting company, everyone thought I was mad. As did when they said, that's going to go and spend a big pile of cash on a printer that I had no knowledge of whatsoever. So I think doing your research into the market to make sure that there is a market has been something that's been quite useful. So people want fabrics printed. People have wanted knitting more. They've wanted web design services, that sort of thing.
The web design is obvious to me, but the knitting and the printing, it's like, well, where did you get that? Did it just come about and you go, well, I'm just going to find out if there is a business in this, and actually, yes, I believe there is, and if there isn't, then I'm going to make one anyway.
Yeah, let me throw something in there, because it's a good thing, and this is my view of Ollie, and what one of Ollie's many talents are, is he knows how to do things online from a marketing and business point of view. So basically, I think the decision he has to make is there a market for the product? And if there is, he'll find it because he knows how to do it, if you see what I mean. Yeah.
So do you go and find the marketplace?
So with the fabric printing as an example, that was brought out of a personal desire to actually make something. And I'd seen a couple of companies do it quite well and do really rather well out of it. So there are certain tools you can deploy online to measure how big that market is likely to be before saying, okay, it is worth taking a punt on this. So I'd always do the research first, and there are some really good tools out there to gauge the size of a market. As long as, for example, Google Insights.
Yeah.
If you have a reference point, say, a product that you know very well and you know what the size of that market is, and you can compare that to pretty much anything, you say, okay, well, this market's going to be 10 times the size of that market, or actually this market's too small, and then you think, okay, so spending a couple of $100,000 on a machine isn't necessarily a big risk when the market's going to be this much.
Risk assessment as well,
to an extent. Yeah,
I was going to say, and then when does it go, do you know what, I love it, I'm just going to go and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Certainly with printing fabric has been the first part of something much bigger that we want to do, so it's taken much longer to actually get the technological side of it working in the way that we need it to. And the level of automation we've got, the amount of software programming. PrintFab is a business that I've set up with my brother, a younger brother, who's an incredible software developer. So he's written all the systems that automate this production. It's taken a lot longer to get to that stage, but now we're at a stage where we can manufacture pretty much any fabric we want. Is then take that to the next level and do something much bigger than the custom printed fabric market, which is a great business in itself. But it's not the Versace or the Gucci or the you know, the really big business, which is the thing we're gunning for.
I could ask so many questions.
I know.
So, like, for example, we say never go in business with family and friends. That's not true, because that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I would, with my brother in particular, Harry. We'd done some consultancy projects together. We're very, very different. So we're not competing. We've got very different qualities and strengths. And where we've worked together for quite a few years, it's worked really, really well. And it's.
Do you find that your family relationship doesn't bleed into the business, or it doesn't really matter?
It's sort of the same. It doesn't really affect anything, really. I mean, at family days, we perhaps might not talk to each other as much because we see each other most days.
Yeah.
But it's great, and it's it means we're both, well, in this particular business, we're both utilising our sort of brains and our strengths in a really good business that allows us to sort of flex those muscles. In terms of the relationship, I don't really think about it really, because it's never been a problem.
So I love it.
I think very closely about going into business with friends, though. That's something I've always said. Yeah, because there's often competing interests, and everyone wants to do well for themselves. And whereas actually with Harry and I, there's kind of a, although we both want to do well for ourselves, we're both batting for the same side. So there's no real conflict, I think.
As someone that's invested in businesses, in startup businesses, that's always the danger, because at the outset of any of these ventures, everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet. But very quickly, you can all kind of diverge into different desires out of what you want from a particular business. As an investor, I want an exit sale to get my money back. And, you know, the people that you invest in go, ooh, you know, we could make this the biggest thing since sliced bread, and, you know, da, 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 da. So you can go in different directions. And that's one of the things I wanted to briefly talk to you about, Ollie, as someone that's founded and sold businesses. Give us an insight into your thoughts and feelings about exiting a business, selling a business. You know, in your experience, have you got to the point where you go, right, I want to sell this now? Or is it been people come to you and go, we want to buy it? How does it work for you, or how has it worked for you?
So a bit of all things, really, depending on – so I was very lucky to have worked with a guy that buys a lot of businesses. And I got a real insight how to – how that side of thing works as well. Very different to the way I sold, or the way we sold the previous businesses. For me, it's been selling it when the business is growing. There are a lot of businesses out there that are for sale because something's gone wrong. And 9 times out of 10, you're better off waiting until they go into administration and just pick up their assets anyway, which is what we do as a business now. We wait for that to happen with some people, and we snap these things up. But for me, to get the what's worked for me, I can't say it'll work for everyone, is business is growing. You sell it on, most businesses will get a, I don't know, 4 or 5 times valuation. If you're able to sell it when it's growing, you can often get a much higher multiple. And it makes sense to sell at that time if that's what you want to do. If you want that big cash out at a good time, great. Actually, if you want an income for the rest of your life and run this business, that's fine.
From your point of view, with I'm sure it's different for different businesses that you've had. When you made the decision that you wanted to exit the business, was that because you got bored with it, because you thought it had kind of, you were approaching the peak of its value, or because you had ideas to do something else, or a combination of those?
Probably a combination of all those, really.
Yeah,
I think with the Knitting Mall business, the business had grown so fast, so quickly. It was a little, I wouldn't say scary, but the future was a little bit uncertain. And perhaps we wanted to do slightly different things. And then there was only a handful of people that could have bought the business anyway in that market.
Yeah.
And the opportunity not. So
you took it. Yeah. And why not? Yeah, absolutely. Because there is that, isn't it? There is the opportunity cost as well. Because I like what you say. I mean, quite a few people say, oh, you know, I'm going to sell my business now. And they do it. It's almost a fire sale because they can see that the business is falling off. They're getting too old or whatever. Da, 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 da. I was approached a couple of years ago, and this is really sad, really, really sad. A couple wanted to sell me their business, and they wanted £1 million for it. And it just wasn't worth £1 million. But they'd put 20 years into this business. But they were desperate to retire. And over the last 2 or 3 years, they hadn't been putting the effort into it, and it had started to tail off. And, you know, they were desperate to make some money out of it, but it just wasn't there anymore. And it was made worse by the fact that they didn't want to do an earn-out. Yeah, so they weren't prepared to stay in the business. They wanted to sell it and walk away. And I actually offered them $400,000 for the business rather than $1 million, and they went, no, no, no. I found out a while later that they actually ended up selling the business for $150,000.
Mm.
Yeah, because it just had no value left in it. Yeah.
I've seen that a lot where a lot of people, certainly after, in the sort of, let's call it the gap years, I looked at a lot of businesses to buy and found that a lot of people have some really unrealistic expectation of value, especially if it's a small business and the owner's actually involved in the operation.
And it's a service business as well. Yeah.
Some real bonkers valuations. It's, So I decided that actually I stopped looking at it. I used to get so angry when people would come along and say, I want a couple of million pounds for my business that makes £5,000 a year. And it's intrinsically linked to me. But it was certainly interesting looking at those businesses and,
Did any of them give you any ideas, though, when you look at them? I've looked at businesses, and I fully concur. You know, people come along and they go, I want 5 million quid. And you go, don't be stupid. Don't be stupid. It's just not,
It's very tempting, I think, looking at some of these businesses. But I think, well, they've let me in to look at their business. It would be poor form to then use that information to do something yourself. Yeah. I've tried to stay clear of that. Although, that said, there's some businesses out there right now that are just ripe for being bought, but there's always something that stands in the way, whether it be a ridiculous valuation or unrealistic owners or anything, things like that. So,
from your point of view, and this is an awful question, and you're going to go, I don't know, but do you see any particular markets that you think, or market sectors or whatever, where you think that's got future, that's worth looking at, that's worth moving into?
Healthcare, I think. There's a lot of stuff going on in healthcare at the moment. A lot of it's being privatised. I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I don't know if they're necessarily good opportunities. It's something a bit uncomfortable about making money out of healthcare, I think, personally. But I can see lots of opportunities there. And that's one thing. I think a lot of things in manufacturing that might have been done overseas, such as clothing manufacture, I can certainly see. And I'm hoping that's going to start coming back.
So you're seeing a lot of onshoring, a lot of stuff coming back to the UK for manufacture because technology has enabled them to compete.
Perhaps, and consumer demand is changing where, actually the complete opposite of that was Primark, where you can buy a T-shirt for £2.50. But there's a lot of things where people might want to make 200 dresses. And that's now being made possible and feasible in this country as opposed to getting that done overseas. I think it's the guy on Dragon's Den where he asks people, how much are you getting, how much are you paying for your fabric to be printed? And he'll quote £6 or £7. And I'm thinking, actually, it can be done a lot less than that. So I can see a lot of that. Oh, hopefully a lot of that stuff will come back this way. And sort of shorter runs of clothing, fabric, all that sort of thing, sort of come back to the UK.
What's the greatest piece of wisdom that you've learnt from the many businesses that have failed. I can imagine you've had more failures than wins. Would that be fair? Like Michael Jordan would, score less than he's actually shot.
What would you say
is the biggest piece of wisdom that you go, do you know what, I take that with me on every business, or I use that piece of knowledge that I have?
I think with everyone that doesn't quite work out, there's something you can take away from it. So as an example, I tried to manufacture some Wi-Fi controlled RGB colour lights, and I know absolutely nothing about electronics, and I spent a little bit of money trying to get these things manufactured, but it was so far out of my comfort zone. I didn't really know how to communicate with the people I was working with properly. And in the end, I just felt like a bit of an idiot because I want these colour changing lights and I don't know how to say how they're going to work, and it all got very technical, and there were ZB controllers or something like that. And it was too far out of my expertise, and I was being solely reliant on other people. And ultimately, I got frustrated and binned it in the end. But so that was, you have to have at least the ability to learn what's in that market, I think.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then it's really difficult.
And to walk away as well.
Yeah.
That takes courage, doesn't it? Just to go, do you know what? This isn't working. Yeah. I feel awful. I'm going to lose this money, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter, clearly.
The moment for me was because they were garden lights I was trying to make, and I had a few prototypes, and I did this in the summer, and I had to wait for it to get dark. And, of course, it doesn't get dark in the summer.
That's genius.
It was 11, 12 o'clock at night, and I was sneaking out into the garden with these lights of all these animals around me trying to eat me. And it's,
Ollie, how does your wife tolerate you?
He's up to it again.
Please tell me how she, when you got, do you actually go to your wife, love, I've got this great idea, and she goes, rolls the eye moment, does she just sit and go, or is she vacant with you, or is she present with you? What happens?
I'm very lucky, actually, that I've married Alison, my wife, who's, and we're, we have a good understanding of this sort of thing, and we met, relevant to the picture of a slough up there, actually, earlier. Very early on, before we got married, she's always pushed me to do things that are perhaps a little bit out of my comfort zone. And we had a conversation, and there was a decision where we made where I was going to sit on the slough roundabout and just go round and round and round. Oh, we'll go on the roller coaster. And we both agreed at that point, 10 or 11 years ago, that we were going to go on the roller coaster. And it has really been a roller coaster. There's been massive highs and there's been some really lows as well. But we both signed up for that. So that's not to say when I come home and say I'm going to go and spend 100 grand on her. I want to wear out some grow chilies in there. She doesn't sort of raise her eyebrows and
really, Ollie, really.
But I think it's vital that you do have that support.
Yeah, of course it is.
That
yeah.
you do have somebody that you maybe, I don't know if she's a bit of a soundboard as well, where you can go, love, what do you think of this? Or
no, not really.
No, no and that's no. the difference. Or they just, or you're just given that, not freedom, but it is that freedom to make the mistakes, to lose the money, to go, well, this is part of the journey. I think that's an acceptable.
We've never lost a huge amount of money on something that's gone wrong. We've always, if it's something that's clearly not going to work, we've always stopped. The growing chilies in a warehouse was a absolutely bonkers business. So stupid. I don't know what I was thinking. But I had a passion for chilies. I thought, I'm going to start growing these commercially in a warehouse using hydroponics. So I got a warehouse.
That's what he says anyway. He says they were chilies.
Yeah.
This is the reason I stopped. I invited my dad over.
Getting raided. Yeah.
It's still not legal in this country.
But I invited my dad over and he said, oh, you know, what is it you're doing in here, son? I said, I'm growing chilies, lots of them. He said, it doesn't look like that. And I thought, actually, I don't want to be associated with a business that even looks like I'm growing that sort of thing. So I took down all the kit and I've got stacks of this stuff now.
Well, don't sell it, Ollie, because it's the second biggest business in the US at the minute.
Really?
Seriously. It's a $1 billion.
Or growing chilies.
Yeah, that's right. And the equipment that goes with it. Seriously.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Now, starting up again, to grow chilies, it's nothing else. But it's just the economics behind it don't make sense. And I looked very closely at Planet Earth and see how they do it. And a lot of that's subsidised. And it's, I don't know, but I don't think it's commercially viable as a standalone thing. Mm. I don't know. It's, when I looked at it a few years ago, it didn't seem to. So. It does fascinate me, the idea of producing food anywhere without having to be reliant on sunshine.
What were these meals that you made Alison eat?
Oh, this was the... I really wish I'd done this one properly as well. This was a few years ago, before everyone was eating Mexican food. And Taco Bell in the States, quite popular. And there wasn't really a Mexican-type, takeaway-type thing. And this was a good few years ago, probably... 2010-11, so I thought I'd invent one and do that over here, and tried for a very long time to create delicious Mexican food, but it was all utterly terrible. But I've got the notebooks at home with every iteration detailed, and the thing that stopped that working is that I was unable to cook decent Mexican food. But shame really, because a few years afterwards you go in the supermarkets and there's Mexican food everywhere, and you've got all sorts of chains out there now. And it was just before then, so maybe if I got it right, I might be sitting in Monaco on a yacht somewhere, who knows.
It's funny though, isn't it, because timing, it can also be everything in a business. You know, some things don't work and some things do. You know, I've used the example of video phones. Video phone technology was really developed in 1962, 63, 64. And there were video phones on the market, but nobody ever used them. And it wasn't until probably the early 2000s where video phone technology by default suddenly came into its own with things like Skype. But the technology to do it's been around for 40 odd years, but the market was never ready for it.
And you never had the trend of selfies.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about it earlier, weren't we? Just about that timing of... I can't remember what you're saying now, actually. It'll come back to me. I was just talking about selfies and that. But I agree with you. It's how people use it, and then that timing of it.
Do you guys ever use video phone calls at all?
No.
Depends now. I actually use phone call more than anything because I can use my phone in the car.
I know the only time I use time. It was with the kids. Kids grab the iPad, and then they're all dancing around, and they seem to be very comfortable using it. Whether it's because they're small and... don't understand yet, maybe, that they shouldn't be in their pyjamas, or it's not acceptable to phone people in your pyjamas.
I've never been a great one for Skyping or anything like that, but my eldest son and his family are just about to move to France. So if I want to talk to my grandson, it's going to be Skype or WhatsApp or something. So it'll be video phone. Mm. Yeah.
I know, whenever a friend will phone me or a video phone me, it's a bit weird. I quite like WhatsApp messages and things like that. So a phone call was a bit odd, I think, nowadays. Mm. Well, it is for me, at least. Mm. It's, yeah.
Cool. Ollie, we could talk to you all day. Okay. It's fascinating stuff. It really is fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for all of that. Look, if people want to find out more about PrintFab, how can they do that?
The website, printfab.com, PrinfAb.com. And that really does sort of show everything that we do, and you should have a go at printing your own fabric. It's really easy, and the quality is really, really quite amazing, so it's good fun too.
Fantastic. Ollie, thank you so much for that. Do check it out, PrintFab, and keep an eye on this young man, because you never know what he's up to next.
I've got so many questions. Quick last one. Have you ever had a print that somebody's put through and you thought, oh my God, that's going to look awful, and it's turned out brilliant? And then one that's turned out awful and you thought, oh my God, that looks awful.
Yeah, it can be really difficult to tell what something's going to print when it's on the screen. And there was an example recently with, there was a print onto velvet, which is a really lovely fabric. And the colours look really off on screen. But this person, this particular customer, really must have known what they were doing. Because when it came out, it just looked mind-bogglingly good. It was really, really quite amazing. And they'd almost come out sort of fluorescent, some of the colours. Mm. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time. We see some really, really incredible stuff going through. It's especially from some of the sort of younger fashion student type people. And they put something through and you look at it on the screen and think, oh, that's bonkers. That looks crazy. What on earth are they going to do it? And then you follow it up and see what they're doing with it on Instagram, and you'll see that this person has got, I don't know, say 100,000 followers, and they're making it into this sort of denim suit or something like that. And it looks amazing. Absolutely amazing. I don't know much about fashion, but you can just tell that, wow, this is amazing.
And so you can actually print on velvet?
We can, yeah.
Blimey. I would never have thought that, you know, because velvet's kind of hairy.
Sort of a dye sublimation rather than actually printing onto it, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I should have bought something.
He was just swearing at me then, wasn't he? Dye sublimation.
He was doing his tech talk.
I thought that. Before I asked him, I thought, I bet that's dye sublimation. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. He's been trying to fit that in hour into him.
He's been tasked with that. Harry said to him, get that in. Yeah.
Can you fit this word in?
Word bingo.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Fantastic. Ollie, thank you so much for that. Absolutely brilliant, as always. We've not got a huge amount of time left. We've got some more emails and tweets and stuff to read. What you got, Bert?
I've got long ones, but I'm going to make them short. So apologies if they were your email, but I'm just going to get them in. So we've got the Tech Expo UK, and that's at the Clive Empsom Suite, and that's at Kent Event Centre, Detling, on the 26th of September. So we've got speakers like Brian Sutton from Microsoft, Richard Bell, CTO of Den Intelligence. We've got Ben Abbott, CEO of Maximum Media. We've got Will Charlesworth of Cripps Law. There's workshops. There's CEO of 6-2 Tech, Aaron Taylor. Basically, it's a tech expo, not been held before. You've got to get along. That's the 26th of September, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m.
Fantastic. Thank you. I want to tell you about this. I haven't got a huge amount of data about how you can find out more about it, but you've got plenty of time anyway. It's the Knoll Park Golf Club Lady Captains Charity Day. And it's taking place on Tuesday the 20th of August. And there's loads of things you can win. There's golf structure, shotgun start, royal flush rumble. I don't know what any, I don't play golf, so I don't know what any of this means. But if you play golf, it must mean something to you. Teams of four, one lady per team, men yellow tees, ladies red tees. Improve your score with a charger pack, £10 per team, £20 extra to start on the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 16th or 17th. I have no idea what any of this means. But the point is, there's lots of things happening. There's coffees and pastries, there's bacon rolls, there's a carvery lunch, there's prizes for up to third place, nearest the pin, and then nearest the pin on selected holes. There's a raffle, there's wine bottles, there's an auction, there's business sponsors opportunities, and the entry fee is £35 for Knoll members or £50 for non-members. But the thing is, all of the money's going to the Kenwood Trust.
Nice.
Yeah. So the whole thing is in aid of the Kenwood Trust. So do get along. It's on the 20th of August at Knoll Park Golf Club. We are going to talk about this a bit nearer the time, but just to get you ready, for taking part if you're a golfer.
And in my opinion, we don't have enough raffles.
Enough raffles?
No.
Have you ever been to Raffles?
No.
In Singapore?
No.
I have. It's nice.
Is it?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Very colonial. Have you been?
No. Can't afford that. No.
Yeah.
Can't afford that. He's starting every business going.
Yeah.
Sorry, Alison, we can't go to Singapore, love. I'm starting this business in cups.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. We got the spectacular soloist announced for Leeds Castle Summer Concert. Now, this is going to take place on Saturday, the 13th of July. It's a massive organisation, unique celebration of Leeds Castle's remarkable, get ready for this, 900-year milestone. There is Unwin Meller, is one of the UK's leading sopranos, who's currently in great demand, flying between appearances in Germany, the UK. Oh my gosh, there's so much going on there. You've got to get going. And there's also Louise Dearman as well. They are both two sensational female performers. If you want to know more, you want to book tickets, go and visit Leeds. Oh, hold on. Sorry, www.leedscastleconcert.co.uk. And by the way, Braces are once again on their headline sponsorship.
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from the Romney Resource Centre, and they say, have you ever wanted to trace your family tree? The Romney Resource Centre is running a three-week course on family trees on May the 10th, 17th and 24th. If you want to find out about it, I do wish Twitter wouldn't shorten these handles. It makes life so difficult. Then go to romney-resource.co.uk/courses. That's interested in finding out about ancestry.
Have you ever done it?
No. My dad, before he passed away, had spent a lot of time researching family tree, and I've got all the data that he collected, but I've never done it myself.
A good friend of mine who lives just down the road in Ashford, so he runs a company called DNA Fit. Actually, it's called Prenetics now.
Right.
And they do DNA testing to to do diets and things like that. Amazing stuff. Really, really cutting-edge stuff.
Absolutely. Well, my family tree was a bit odd. There was thousands of them, but they all had the same name. They were all called Albert, which is bizarre because my grandson's called Albert now as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Good. What you got?
Save the date. Put our annual South East Construction Exhibition in your 2019 diaries. Thursday, the 26th of September, South of England Event Centre, Ardingly. And that's book your place here.
Ardingly.
It doesn't say that.
I know, but it's pronounced Ardingly.
Who spells that?
I know, it's like
Lim, isn't it?
It's like Lim or Rootham.
When I first moved up to these parts.
Or Trosley, even.
Limpney,
yeah.
I said it as, instead of Lim. Yeah. Ardingly. Book your place, www. ConstructionExpo.uk. Also, there's a handwritten thing on here as well, which is the ConstructionExpoAwards.co.uk. What do you know?
Yeah, it's sponsored by All Health Matters. It's the first year of running the Construction Awards for the South East. So do get involved in that.
So is it more occupational health? What is it?
No, it's Construction Awards. But All Health Matters are an occupational health company. They are sponsoring the awards for the construction industry.
Excellent.
Yeah. Help us bridge the gap between school and business. As business owners, managers, join us and the Federation of Small Business to inspire the next generation of talent. This is the School 3030 event. We have just had our 1,000th person go through the programme.
Wow.
It's a completely free programme to schools. We've had 1,000 people go through it now, where we introduce 30 businesses to 30 A-level students to talk about the world of work and do some networking and some workshops. Totally free, only a couple of hours. If you run a school, do it. We need more schools signing up to do it. If you want to find out when the next one is as a business to help us, we would much appreciate it. KentBusinessRadio.co.uk/30-30. Find out all about it. 1,000 people now.
Nice.
Fantastic. What you got? Got a minute left. Is that it? Have you finished?
I'm all right.
Cool. Well, I need to tell you about our sister show on Friday, the Business Bunker Extra Show with Amanda. And this week, Amanda's co-host is the lovely Richard Bell. And Richard is from 10 Intelligence. So they've got a security special talking about cyber security. But they've also got a guest who's the lovely Roxana Mohammedin Molina. So do join the Business Bunker Extra Show this Friday from 11 a.m. till 12 a.m. here on channelradio.co.uk/2 or on bizradio.co.uk for Amanda, Richard and Roxana. Do join in with all of that. I think we're just about there, Bird. What do you reckon?
Oh, it's been a great show, isn't it?
It's been fabulous, hasn't it?
I love it.
So I want to say a real big thank you to this week's show sponsor, Helping Hand Early Years Consultancy, to our fantastic guest, Mr. Chris Hyde of Chameleogenics. Well done, Chris. And don't forget to have a listen out to Chris's podcast, the Taking Off podcast, and you can follow him on a Twitter. If I can remember his Twitter handle, it's TOWS Indy. Towers Indy is the handle for that. A huge thank you to Mr. Oliver Musto Playfair of PrimFab. Thank you so much, Ollie. It's lovely to see you again and hear about all the things that you're involved in. It's really fascinating stuff. Big thank you to Bird for co-hosting this week's show. But we've reached the end of another show for another week. We'll be back next Tuesday with another Business Bunker show. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, everyone, and we'll speak to you all soon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.